to read something first from the big book. If you want to read along, fine. It's not too long. But we also will be looking at the big book in the workshop. It's in The Doctor's Opinion, which is one of my favorite chapters. They're describing the different types of alcoholics that they see. And science has changed some of what the way this should read. But some of it they were right on. And this was a description of me. Then there are types, that isn't normal. Then there are types entirely normal in every respect, except in the effect alcohol has upon them. They are often able, intelligent, and friendly people. So I wasn't entirely normal, I can tell you that, and we'll talk about that. But all of these and many others have one symptom in common, one symptom. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomena of craving. So keep that in mind, the phenomena of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. Okay, I think that's it for now. So, I'm trying to think about, well, anyway, I'll just let things flow and we'll see where they go. At about age 5, I had 5 to 8, I had several traumatic events happen in my life. Never mind that I lived in a very dysfunctional family and a very harsh environment and had no one to talk to. But those three traumatic events created neurological changes in my head and I became depressed and nobody knew it. I covered it up most of the time. Other times I couldn't cover it up, but, I went on for years like that, years and years, living in what I called the black hole. And I just didn't understand what was wrong with me. There were days I didn't want to get out of bed. And because our family was all in their own crises all the time, no one really noticed. My mother was a compulsive overeater. In fact, she died of obesity-related issues, heart. So she was always making foods to feed her addiction. And of course, I ate right alongside her. And the foods that she ate are still some of my favorite binge foods, but I don't eat them. So when I was old enough and I could start doing it, I started getting my own food. I didn't want to rely on anybody else for my drugs. I wanted to have them all on my own. When I was 15, it was the first time I ever became drunk at a party, and I felt happy, very happy, in fact. And I remember we were living in Fairbanks at the time, and someone gave me a ride home in a Volkswagen convertible at 40 below, and the heater didn't work, and I was not cold. But my little brain went, oh my God, this is what I've been looking for. And that along with food and periodically quite often other drugs became my way of life for about 12 years. And it was not a great thing. It was not a very pretty life. I was still not that happy. I didn't like waking up hungover from food. I didn't like getting drunk and waking up from that. I didn't like things that I said or did. So when I was 27, I got off drugs and alcohol. I think it was right around there, 27, 28. And of course, then food became the only addiction. And it was the beginning. I call it the mother addiction because it was the first addiction I ever had. And it was related to my mother. So the food blew up in my face. And thus began, I don't know how many years, I'm going to guess 13 years or more, in OA trying to get abstinent. And I didn't understand that my mental health was related to the food addiction. I just thought if I could stop compulsively overeating and be the weight that I wanted to be, everything would be perfect. Well, it wouldn't be perfect. And I would go a period of time. The longest was 16 months during those 13 years of abstinence, 16 months of abstinence. And I thought I had it made. And I relapsed because I started getting memories about certain things, those traumas in my childhood. Nowhere to go, didn't know what to do with them. So of course the food became the issue. And then I became so ashamed of relapsing that I left program for almost 4 years and said, F it, I'm gonna eat what I want when I want to. And I went to the highest weight in my life, which was about 220, maybe 225. I stopped weighing after a while. I can tell you that I felt my skin stretching. And that was a new experience and scared the hell out of me. I started shopping at Lane Bryant. God bless Lane Bryant. God bless him. I'm just saying that that's where I started to shop. So 13 years of relapses, I thought I could figure this disease out. I thought I could outthink it. I could just figure out why I relapsed each time. And then I'd put it in that box. Okay, never do that again, because that causes relapse. And pretty soon the box got too big, you know, and I would relapse on things I couldn't even explain, because this is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And I went up and down in weight and up and down in weight, as you can imagine, up and down in weight, hating myself every time I relapsed, not understanding that I had mental health issues and neurological addiction issues. Addiction changes your brain. And we'll talk more about that in the 12-step workshop. My brain is not the same as a quote unquote normal person. And it never will be the same. I mean, that's what I kept wanting to do in program. It's like, well, yeah, I want my cake and eat it too, just like everybody else. I want to keep doing what I'm doing and not gain weight, which is another example of fantasy thinking, which is a part of addiction for me. And I still deal with regularly. It was a coping mechanism as a child to have fantasies. So I went to treatment during those 13 years. I went to treatment 4 times. I was lucky enough to be able to do that. Different places. And I learned a lot. But as they tell us in our invitation to you, you can learn a lot. It doesn't matter. You can know everything. Well, there is, you can't know everything, but you could know a lot about addiction and a lot about why you binge. But when it comes right down to it, you can't know everything. Again, cunning, baffling, and powerful. The disease is smarter than me. It's way smarter than me. And it took me to some really, really bad places. I was suicidal on and off. My husband would come home at night and find me laying on the couch with 3 bags of groceries in front of me, all partially eaten. I mean, I'm a gutter eater. I'm a binge eater. I'm not gonna excuse my F around, you know, with one bag of something. I can't, because once I start, just like I read in the big book, once I start with one bite, I'm gone. It's a bobsled run. And I end up at the bottom of the run, beat to hell, just beat up. And getting abstinent, again, I know some of you have experienced this, it's hard after a relapse. And it takes a lot of effort. It's a lot of program. But it's not impossible. We have tools that work. Not just for us, but for lots of other addicts in the world. We have tools that work. So I came back after 4 years. Well, let me tell this one story. The last treatment I went to was actually here in Arizona, up north in Phoenix, called The Meadows. Fabulous place. And to fly down there, I had to overnight in Seattle. That's kind of the way it is in Juneau. We kind of have to usually stay overnight in Seattle. And I stayed at the Hilton by the airport. And of course, I was binging. I was binging in my hotel room. And I had room service coming like three times, you know. And at one point, I stood out on the balcony and seriously contemplated jumping off because I was scared. I didn't want to go. I was ashamed. I was hopeless and despairing because I had relapsed over the other three treatments after, I mean, treatment programs. After a period of abstinence, I would always relapse again. So that's how dark my disease took me. So when I came back after being gone for 4 years and decided to try getting abstinent again, and I decided to try getting abstinent again because my life was hell and there was nowhere else to go. And I knew that OA worked. This wasn't some virtuous, you know, thing that I had, like, oh, I'm so wonderful. I'm going to go back to OA. Yeah, I just kind of crawled back to OA. And I wasn't even sure that the program would work for me, but I had no other choice except to try. I relapsed so many times. I was convinced that I was a hopeless relapser. But this is where the saying comes in. It doesn't matter what you think, it matters what you do. So I took the tools, and just like someone else mentioned today, I went to a meeting every day for more than 90 days. And because we didn't have that many OA meetings in Juneau, I went to AA. But a meeting every day. In fact, I went longer than that, about 6 months, every day. And I got a sponsor. I mean, everything we talk about, food plan, center my food plan every day, did telephones. Back then we had cassette tapes. And I'd listen to those in my car, out the road and back. I called my sponsor a lot in the beginning. I was very needy. I'm not gonna say needy. I was very shaky. And I would even sit in meetings and say, relapse is inevitable. God, I'm sorry to everyone who, I apologize right now to anyone who ever heard that. But luckily there were people with more recovery who said, no, relapse is possible. It is not inevitable. So I just didn't listen to my brain. I just kept one foot in front of the other. And as my sponsorees know, one of my favorite sayings is chop wood, carry water. Don't get caught in your head, just do the work. And I did every tool I could imagine because I was scared. I was so scared that I was going to go back there. And that threat is still with me. And I'm still scared of that. It's a healthy fear. It's like walking through the forest where there's bears and a fresh salmon stream. You know, it was a healthy fear because I just don't want to go back there. So I went and I got 1 month and 2 months, and I was convinced at month 18, I would relapse because that's where I'd relapsed at before, was at 16. So month 18 came and left, and I didn't relapse. And then 2 years came along, and I hadn't relapsed. And from then on, I will now, well, actually April, a couple of months, I'll have 26 years of back-to-back abstinence. Miracle. Miracle. But it truly came from desperation. From desperation. It's not some wonderful quality I have. It came from 13 years of absolute desperation. You know, they say OA is the last house on the block. I'm incredibly grateful for every day of that abstinence. And because I've been abstinent that long, I've had to grow up. Addiction is a disease of immaturity. And I am confronted continually on a daily basis with my immature belief systems. When I get underneath my issues, it's usually some immature belief system, which my sponsor, I won't say she likes to point it out, but she does point that out. I have changed a lot. I have maintained 105-pound weight loss. I have had no what I would call slippery times, because for me, every single time I had a slip, it led to a binge, which led to relapse. I tried so many different ways. Oh my God, I'm fairly intelligent. And I tried a lot of different ways to work a slip in there, you know, squeeze it in the corner, tuck it in the, you know, just call it something else, you know, or pretend it didn't happen. And for me, when I would slip and eat something that wasn't on my binge list, that action, a compulsive action, I could not stop myself. I am like the guy in the Big Book that they describe, that they, once they take a drink, they cannot stop. And I know other people who can, and that's great, but I learned over 13 years that I can't. I cannot F around. So I have a food plan. I have a food plan that worked for me before when I had 16 months of abstinence. And my sponsor said, why fix it if it works? So I went back to that. I weigh and measure most everything. And my abstinence is, I just don't eat off my food plan. I just don't do it. And then I don't have any confusion. Am I abstinent? Am I not? You know, that sort of thing. I just stay with my food plan and I don't feel deprived. In fact, I feel incredibly lucky, incredibly blessed and lucky. And it, over the years, I've learned all different situations, how to cover myself so I can stay abstinent. Take protein with me if I'm not going to have dinner at the same time. Don't sit next to the snack table. Don't go to places that's going to trigger you. Stay away from staring into the bakery window. You know, I mean, certain aisles in the store, just don't even. At Halloween, it's tempting to walk up and down the aisle and go, well, what new things do they have for Halloween now that I haven't had in 26 years? You know, I don't do it. So I think that's pretty much it. This disease has kicked my ass 100,000 ways. And on the other hand, and I would have never believed this when I first came into program, people would say, I'm grateful. I'm grateful that I have the disease of compulsive eating. And I would think, you're lying. You're not grateful. And now I get it. Because the disease has forced me to embrace these 12 steps, which are incredible in their conception and amazing in their implementation. So that's where I'm not perfect. That's where I say progress, not perfection, is in the steps. I don't say it with my food plan. It just doesn't work for me. And again, this is only about me. This is just my disease. So as a topic today, share whatever you need to share. But as a topic, I just like the idea of cunning, baffling, and powerful. Not taking the first compulsive bite. Don't eat even if your ass falls off. Anything like that. I want to hear your recovery. Thanks so much.